Hello, this is Jade Hoy of the Back to Back podcast. A couple things: if you're looking for Count the Dings merchandise or Back to Back merchandise or bomb merchandise, go to cottonbureau.com. Search Count the Dings. 4 t-shirts, a couple pins, help support the show. Also, it is Wednesday morning for a lot of you. Go to www.fanduel.com/B2B. Sign up to be part of our Wednesday challenge. You win that, you get to come onto the mailbag or the bomb podcast and gloat. But you also get $5 inserted into your FanDuel account when you insert $5. That's about it. I hope you enjoy the show. It's with Sam Amick of The Athletic. Good day.
Ew.
Don't stop raining here.
I know. Same here.
It will not stop.
It is.
Every day.
Clear skies, sunny. Let me give you a weather update.
Every day it rains now.
Temperature. 68 degrees. 65 degrees.
Where is this?
It's 65 in LA. So it's
beautiful.
Winter's here.
Yeah. It's dry though. It's great.
It's a dry cold, as they say.
Supposed to be 85 here in San Antonio today.
Woo!
I'm out on this, man. I don't like it.
85? That's perfect.
No, it's because it's muggy.
Oh, it is.
It's constantly muggy. Apparently, San Antonio is on top of a giant aquifer. So it makes it
an aquifer. The Pelicans backup center?
Yes.
That reluctant laugh from Waz, I'll take it. Network, couple of housekeeping items. Go to cottonbureau.com, search Count the Dings. We've got 4 great shirts there. We've got the golden do-rag pins, but here's the thing, it's only available for like 2 more weeks, so you got your get your pre-orders in now. Today we have Big Waz, we have Dave DeFour, we have Jade Hoy, we have maybe Tom Havershow popping in, I'm Zach Harper, and special guest from The Athletic, my teammate, the one and only Sam Amick. Sam, how's it going?
Yeah.
Oh, that energy. Right? Yeah.
Going good. I've been on the home front for a little stretch. Little Warriors, little Kings, little NBA action. No complaints.
Sam, what's the best part of working with me?
Your power rankings are killing me, Zach. And your ego's going to get a boost. You're funny, man. Like, I can't write like you from a comedic standpoint, and I am normally rolling my eyes at the world of power rankings. And full disclosure, when you decided to do them at our place, I was like, hasn't that been done a million times? And then I'm reading them going, all right, Zach, I mean, you got one-liners, you got...
All right, let's break...
Waz, just real quick, we're just going to do another 35 minutes on how great I am, and then we'll get into some basketball news. Wow,
Listen, I'm throwing one quick one in before we pivot. I'm a sucker for terrible dad humor, and your line about how Ty Lue got fired because he was losing too much, I thought was pretty rich.
It's a recycled material from Twitter. I usually test it out on Twitter before I throw it in the power rankings. It sounds like Waz was being disrespectful, much like maybe the Boston Celtics felt that Jamal Murray was being disrespectful last night. After he torched him for 48, he put up a shot trying to get a 50 piece, and Kyrie Irving threw the ball into the stands, and he called it a bullshit move. And I think Marcus Morris, I'm sorry. The one who doesn't punch people quite as much. Marcus Morris said that it was disrespectful, and they're crying about this. But Waz, this is my take on it. If you don't get torched for 48, you're not in a position to give up 50 at that point.
Exactly. And you know the funny thing? What they were really mad about was that he kicked their asses. Like, you can do this old unwritten rules. He took a shot at the buzzer. That's corny. That's not cool. Blah, 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 blah. They're really mad because he just kicked their asses up and down the court, and they couldn't do anything with him. And that's it. Like, this idea that the guy can't take a shot at the buzzer, like, get out of here with that, man. Like, I'm done with this unwritten rule. I don't understand it. I don't know why we have it. It's disingenuous because it's coming from losers, right? The exactly. People who are bitching about it just got their asses kicked. Like, I don't want to hear from you right now. You're kind of biased.
There's time on the clock, man. You got to play.
There's time on the clock. You're professionals. I mean, Sam, here's my thing. If you didn't want Jamal Murray to have the ball, you should have done this way before. Not throw the ball away at the end of the game. Like, you should have maybe tried a little ball denial at this point.
Yeah, I'm not hating it at all. I think there's context here. Like, I always enjoy it when there's a better, like a bigger narrative. So to me, the Nuggets are in this place as a team where I am 100% on board with them being a disruptor and being an irritant and kind of feeling themselves and essentially sending this message that, you know, we are legit. We just took down Boston, which is one of the best teams out there. And the fact that Kyrie, I mean, and I hear you, he was a loser that night. This guy who's got a ring, this guy who's one of the best in the entire league, got, you know, he's on the wrong side of it in this one. And Jamal gets the last laugh. And plus, I can't relate to the idea of sitting on 48 and wanting it as bad as I'm sure Jamal did, because the way he got it, there was so much of it coming late. I mean, we've had heat checks like crazy already this season. That was on the short list. I mean, that was a really good Celtics team defensively that could do nothing to slow him down. And I was sitting there rooting for him to get over the 50 hump there.
Yeah, Dave, I think the issue here is they wanted to, you know, let's just talk about a little bit of the climate over, let's say, the last, 2 years, right? Is when something bad is happening, you say something out there to distract from what happened, right?
So, oh, yeah.
Usually more consequences than that in the examples I'm thinking of. But for this sake, the best defense in the league just got torched for 48. How do you take the conversation off that? You call them disrespectful. Now we're not talking about the Celtics defense maybe not being as impenetrable as we thought. Now we're talking about, oh, Jamal Murray, he doesn't love the game like we do. He's disrespectful. That's a Bush League move. That's some real politicizing there.
In particular, your counterpart, the guy you were guarding for most of the game. I mean, Kyrie got torched quite a bit. And that's the real thing that nobody's even bringing up. Kyrie was mad at himself. He wasn't mad at Jamal Murray shooting that three. He's mad at himself. I mean, he got smoked. And by the way, Kyrie Irving actually had a pretty good game. He's been great since he got the haircut. But this game from Jamal Murray last night, to me, it was a coming out party. I was really like sad that it was on League Pass and not like a TNT game or something like that. But the idea that there's time on the clock and a guy shouldn't be trying to score is just ridiculous. And you're right. That defense, they were all over the place, and it started with Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving was directly responsible for Jamal Murray going crazy. Now, Jamal Murray also hit some really tough shots, very similar to Kyrie. It's Kyrie's fault. Of course he's mad.
Sam, you're a real journalist. What do you buy Kyrie just definitely going back to the Celtics? I know he said it at that team event, but I kind of think it was just a move of, now I won't get asked about it this season as I head into free agency. And then we'll see what happens this summer.
Yeah. I mean, I've officially reached the point after these past couple of years where you don't never say never on anything, right? Like, so many things have happened that we would have said never on before they end up transpiring. You learn, like, just don't rule anything out. But I would wonder whether, Zach, it's the way you're kind of positing that maybe he didn't want to get asked about it. So he gets ahead of the storyline. Now, all of a sudden, he relieved pressure when it comes to the media component. The more cynical side of me looks at it, and I know this is probably a reach, but that Celtics team, especially the way we saw them going into the season, you know, it was so deep and so many layers to what they bring to the table that if you're Kyrie, I mean, I'm not saying that the Celtics are thinking twice about putting max money on the table for him, but you also kind of want to immediately set in stone the narrative that I'm the guy the Celtics are building around. And, you know, they've got this thing between Kyrie and Gordon Hayward where, because of the injuries and because some of these young guys took their shine while they were out, you know, I'd be dying to know how Kyrie truly looks at the politics of their situation in the locker room. And, right, you know, I thought that might have been part of it too. Just that idea that now it frames it in a way that, hey, Jason Tatum's great, Jaylen Brown, phenomenal, all these other guys. But, you know, he put the narrative out there early that he was the guy they were building around.
See, Sam, you read my mind just now because I was going to ask you that. Because my thing is like, of course, Kyrie's saying, yeah, I'll take $200 million when they offer it to me this summer.
Right.
But I'm like, are we sure that that's what's going to happen?
Right.
Like, what about Danny Ainge makes you think he want to put $200 million in Kyrie's hands?
Right. I mean, I don't have, you know, we're a ways away from it, so I don't want to pretend to have
injury history, all of those.
Yeah, 100%. And not only that, but GM in Danny, who has shown this history of just being completely cutting with the moves he makes. Yeah. I mean, he doesn't.
Which he should be, right, Sam? I mean, I know we talk, like, we get angry the whole, like, you know, hypocrisy with loyalty in this business, right? And how the players aren't really viewed in a fair light when they decide to go against that. But at the same time, like, Danny Ainge should be making decisions like that, even if we don't necessarily think it's a great human aspect, because it is such a cutthroat business.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know where Kyrie might have got the idea that, you know, Danny would be willing to part ways with a guy who had health problems when he had done positive things for the franchise. It's a crazy script that would never take place otherwise. I mean, chances are Kyrie comes back. But yes, in terms of chatter, like, it around the league, there is definitely executives saying, you know, don't 100% assume that Kyrie is going there. You know, it's already been written that the Knicks still hold out a little bit of hope. And people wonder, I mean, things change. If this team doesn't function the way it's supposed to function, if they don't accomplish what they are supposed to accomplish, Danny and Mike Zarin and their entire front office group, you know, and Brad Stevens are going to look at it with a discerning eye, and they're not going to care what Kyrie said going into the season.
If they don't go to the finals, they might get broken up, Zach Harper.
Well, I mean, I think we know that. I think we know the Bucks are ahead of them. I don't know about the Sam. We've got this thing where Waz is pretending to be a Raptors fan and says that Raptors are the best team in the East, and he tried to tell us that we were all going to Toronto for the finals last year, and then the team got swept by George Hill and J.R. Smith. In the second round of the playoffs.
Is Waz sticking by it? Are we still
Waz has doubled down with Kawhi, which is understandable.
Triple down, except, as soon as they made the trade.
Except we're at a point where, I mean, clearly the Bucks are the team of the East. Ooh. And Waz is struggling to, like, Waz just thinks, like, CJ Miles is going to lead the Raptors through the finals, you know, and I don't see it.
All the indicators there with the Raptors, Sam. Point differential. They're killing people on defense. Their bench is killing people again.
The Milwaukee Bucks lead the league in net rating right now.
Better than the Warriors. I said it. The Bucks are the best team in basketball right now.
Point to the schedule strength, y'all.
You can only play
contact.
You can only play.
I'm torn. I'm torn, man. I'm looking at both sides. You know what's crazy? I know this is a tough hill to die on, but, like, you break down the Raptors' numbers. And I thought about this the other day, that if you're DeMar DeRozan and you hear this narrative and it's like, oh my God, the Raptors are top five and, you know, offensive rating and defensive rating. And look at these numbers. These numbers are incredible. They're the same numbers they had last year.
Yeah. For real.
When they became.
But they just don't have the history. So now it's a clean slate. Now you can dare to dream about the idea of, you know, Kawhi leading them to the promised land.
Well, I think, I mean, eye test speaking, what they're doing is a little bit more sustainable, you know, like, they're not taking so many contested shots. They're getting a lot of open looks. So it's a little bit different. I mean, the numbers are similar, but it's a little bit different, you know, on the court.
Different that they have. I mean, I'm not trying to knock DeMar DeRozan here, who's a fantastic player, but they have a real star now. Like, Kawhi is one of the five best players in the world, if not better than that. Right.
Yeah. And Danny Green, who, I mean, they got two starters out of this. Yeah, Danny's so good. So, and then Siakam has really come around.
Apparently they don't even need these boys to go, Kawhi in particular, to keep racking up W's. I mean, it's crazy what they did to the Lakers without Kawhi.
And Utah.
Let's talk about the Lakers. You've been around the Lakers quite a bit. We can get to Utah too. Utah's a mess with this.
Yeah.
Freedom of movement emphasis. They don't know what to do defensively, which is crazy. But the Lakers, I'm around them a little bit. Sam, you've been around them. at what point do we think everything kind of comes to a head? Because, you know, the Luke Walton meeting with Magic Johnson, and everyone says, like, no, Luke's okay. Like, his job security is fine because Jeannie Buss is in his corner. But there's got to be a certain point where, you know, things are going to get tested to a breaking point. I don't know which way it breaks.
Yeah, no, it will. From my perspective, this thought crossed my mind the other day. You know, I put a lot of time into I write that piece about Jeannie Buss and Kobe and yeah. how they got LeBron to town. And part of the whole theme and the idea was that they cleaned house and they cut out the nonsense in time for LeBron to feel comfortable coming to town because he was tired of that type of stuff in Cleveland. Now, as I wrote it and I filed it, as we published it, I kind of had that small part of me thinking to myself, oh, I'm glad I got this story behind me because it's only going to last, you know, this is only going to be the case for a little while. And I mean, here we are. It's not a train wreck, but it's not ideal. Magic's management style, by all accounts, is really tough. And it's also tough is one thing, but it's also it's kind of under a lot of scrutiny internally right now. Because it's just not necessarily based in a ton of substance, and that's maddening for the people that he is evaluating.
In what way? What do you mean?
Meaning that when you go into a meeting with Luke Walton, and your point of emphasis is system,
right?
And you know, and Luke is sitting there going, "All right," and I'm not coming from Luke, but from you know folks who know how that meeting went. He's sitting there looking at it going, we're eighth in offense. First of all, you know, you're going to give up points when you play at the pace that they play at, but the roster stuff is the elephant in the room that I can't imagine being in his shoes, being in that meeting, looking at Magic saying, you've got to be kidding me. You know, like I didn't build this team. I didn't build this roster. And right. So
like at that point, do you think he's like, as Magic's yelling at him, he's just like folding Kentavious Caldwell-Pope jerseys and like Lance Stephenson jerseys to just kind of remind him like, oh, by the way, I'm doing this laundry, but this is your laundry.
Well, exactly. And even if they're, let's say they were both 100% on board, like being supportive of the roster and saying, hey, let's not even debate if we like the roster or not. Let's just, for the sake of this thought exercise, say we like the roster. Then how is the discussion not pointed at the players and they're, you know, the fact that, you know, a handful of guys have been really bad early on who they thought would be better. And let's have the focus be on accountability from the players and not pretend that this is all falling at Luke's feet. I mean, there's stuff to be discussed for sure. You know, even watching
his rotations stink.
Yeah. Well, but it's also,
but who's he supposed to rotate, Waz? Like, that's the thing. If we're looking at this as a flawed roster, like people are like, oh, well, his rotations aren't very good. I'm like,
I don't want to see Lance, Bron, and Rondo on the court at the same time for any reason whatsoever.
Don't worry. Tyson Chandler's going to solve it. Tyson Chandler's going to solve the whole thing, guys.
I mean, I believe it.
I mean, yeah, sure.
I'm kind of mad about the Tyson thing because he's going to get in the way of this incredible JaVale McGee story. It's like the only good thing.
Yeah, that'll last. That'll last. Yeah. That's it.
That was pretty fine, man.
JaVale's playing great. I don't know that. I don't know that all of a sudden he's like, you know, prime Marcus Camby.
Yeah, but so Tyson Chandler, if anybody's watched him the last 2 years, hasn't really been great. Now maybe that's just because the Suns are so bad, but I don't.
Even though he was in the league the last 2 years.
I mean, was he? That's the real question. I mean, he doesn't really defend. Now, he hasn't in Phoenix. And again, bad team. So maybe it's just a case of, you know, not very motivated. But he's not some savior. This is, I don't know, man. This is really hard to unpack because we know this isn't the roster they're going to have, you know, for the majority of the season. I mean, by the trade deadline, half these guys are going to be gone or in different roles.
The other part of this, too, guys, I agree, Dave. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, but it takes two to tango. They got to find stuff out there. I also think the other somewhat overlooked part of this, because it's so easy to talk about the, you know, the island of misfit guys like Lance and JaVale and all the way down the line. But I mean, LeBron hasn't been great. And defensively, his effort's not there. I laughed yesterday because I had somebody hit me up and use the word cruising. They're like, man, he's cruising like crazy. And then sure enough, I peeked at his Instagram story and he was literally cruising in his convertible on the way to Staples Center going to the game. Like,
I mean, that's that, music. that Instagram algorithm listening to your conversations and then figuring out a way to market to you. Yeah.
But it was like the LA, the optics weren't wonderful because it totally was like, I think it was his, you know, drive to that Raptors game where, you know, feeling good, beat Portland, here we go, cruising, and then just get run over by a Mack truck. I mean, he is being patient. And I think there's probably a point where it's patient to a fault. He's just, everything I continue to hear is he's definitely not panicking. He's staying out of this Magic and Luke stuff. He's not about to put his fingerprints on the coaching stuff at all. He's really trying to let stuff play out.
I'm trying to figure out, like, you know, we've talked about this a lot and it's been a conversation, but I think as the season goes on, it becomes actually more of a real conversation of like, who of these young guys is definitely on board moving forward, right? Like, who do they really, like, I think they believe in Kuzma and Hart for sure. Like, do they really believe in Brandon Ingram, or is Brandon Ingram, like, is he not going to fit at any point during his peak with, or during, I wouldn't say his peak, but his peak during the LeBron years, right?
So I think Ingram is definitely the first guy out. Like, I would not be shocked if he's traded this year.
He seems like the most tradable piece to me.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can sell a team acquiring him on, like, hey, man, this guy, because he has a lot of skill. He has a lot of developing skill. I just, you know, is he going to be an impact at any point during the next 3 years? Like, I don't know.
If you've watched him this year with LeBron, I mean, he basically can't play with LeBron. It's pretty crazy to see a guy who is that ineffective. And then when he plays without LeBron, he's great. I mean, he scored like 21 points the other night without LeBron on the court out of 24 total. I thought that was very telling. And, you know, they're just not going to have a guy who can't produce next to LeBron. I think that he still has value around the league. There's a lot of people that think he's going to be better than Jaylen Brown, which I disagree with. But still, like, just to let you know that he actually has value going around. The issue, and like Sam said, it takes two to tango. I don't know who they go get. I don't know, like, who are they going to bring in? I mean, Kyle Korver doesn't move the needle. They're not going to trade Brandon Ingram for him. Jimmy Butler, like, are they going to make that move?
They won't make it.
So that's the bigger problem. There's just not a lot of guys out there that are available.
I want to tell you, Dave, that your thoughts on Ingram with without LeBron were way off because per 36 minutes, Ingram is averaging 15.4 points per 36 minutes with LeBron on the court. It only goes up to 31.3 when LeBron gets off the court. So, I mean, you were just, you know, it's barely double. It's barely double the production.
All right. Yeah. So but again, man, like, how are you going to keep him around if he can't function with your best player?
No, you're right. I mean, that becomes the whole thing of like it's the transition roster of Cleveland. Right. Like it's all of a sudden like, all right, who do we have? Who can we move? Like what are the moves that are going to do? Sam, do you think they already regret not throwing him into the mix for Kawhi? Because you can say like, well, they didn't know LeBron was coming, but like, didn't they know LeBron was coming? Didn't everyone kind of know LeBron was coming?
I mean, they were, you know, it was one of those like down to the 10-yard line, 5-yard line type things as far as how they saw it. They, you know, they swear, I mean, they're right. You can't count your chickens before they hatch, and they had to see the thing through. But yeah, I have to assume that there's some regret there. If they don't regret it, they're just not being honest with themselves, because they, you know, they got burned by the Paul George situation, and it's, you know, salt in the wound when Paul just continues to talk about openly the fact that he would have been a Laker if they would have traded for him. And, you know, this landscape that you kind of just detailed right now is not only tricky in the present tense, because like I hear you guys on the idea that maybe Brandon is the first guy out the door, but the major problem there is that to me, there's a big gap between the way they see Brandon, Lonzo, Kyle, and Josh. Like, Brandon is the guy who's supposed to be star number two. And, you know, I don't think they see the other three guys that way. And so unless you're getting something major in return, I don't know how you make that move. The Kawhi thing, they should have gone all in. And now I look at next summer, and this is going to, I think, make July really interesting. It's just, we keep assuming that somebody is going to be running to Lakerland to play with LeBron. And when you get, you know, when you go through that list and you talk about all the different X factors with each guy individually, there's not a guy who I look at and say, yeah, that's probably the one, you know, and we'll see right. what happens. There's a long time between now and then, but I think, you know, it's crazy to me that they could be on cloud nine with good reason, because they got LeBron James, and then in such short order, be looking at like the next step and kind of going, oh crap, like how do we see this thing through?
Yeah. And then when they solve all this by trading for Anthony Davis, we're all going to look dumb, and all the Lakers folks are going to say, I told you so.
Yeah, but that, right. I mean, mm-hmm. if signing Anthony Davis means another 2 years.
No, I meant trade for him.
Oh, trade for him.
I mean, yeah. did you watch him last night? Part of this is injury, but he's listless. Good, yeah. I mean,
he just looks defeated.
Oh, he's auditioning for the Wolves?
I mean, he gave that interview where he talked about the fact that he has to play nearly perfect in order for them to win, and how it's a little bit frustrating. I mean, he just doesn't sound like a guy who's very happy.
No, AD's he is the one. Like, if you that's definitely, and it's great for the Lakers. Every time the Pelicans look bad, I mean, their 4-0 start or whatever it was the worst news, you know, for the Lakers. And there's a correlation that we're going to keep tracking, because again, around the league, people definitely think AD is gone if they can't get that team to the next level. And, you know, I wasn't believing in Elfrid Payton and, you know, I like Julius Randle a lot, but that's not the type of supporting cast that I think is going to compel AD to stick around. So that's the one. Once you get past AD, then they got to be worried. I mean, the Rich Paul connection is real. Like, that's not media hype. That's not us connecting dots that don't exist. Like, that's a big deal that he signed with LeBron's agent. So, you know, that is the one they should be rooting for.
Yeah, but my thing, Sam, is if a bidding war starts, I don't feel like the Lakers have enough guns, especially when you consider somebody like Boston. And, you know, we can talk about Jason Tatum being quote-unquote untouchable. But, like, if you start looking at Boston and L.A., they don't have as much bullets as the Celtics do, especially if the Celtics are willing to do a Toronto or a OKC and be like, look, I know you'd probably rather be somewhere else, but we're going to trade for you anyway and make you understand that this is a good place to land.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, that's the thing. The Celtics have still got that cupboard full, and a lot of other teams. I mean, and if you're the Lakers, you're going to face the same equation that you faced with the Kawhi Leonard situation, that you faced with Paul George, which is, you know, you're trying to not do what the Knicks did however many years ago when they got Melo, and they, you know, they lost everything, you know, all their momentum to get the guy, and then they weren't very good. So, I mean, that's where it gets tricky.
If you're the Lakers, there's not, like, if the Pelicans said, oh, we want Kuz, we want Ingram, we want Lonzo. Like, I don't think I think they could demand all four young guys. Right. And if you're the Lakers, you say, yes, we got Anthony Davis. Like, yeah, that's a lot to give up, Sam. But you, like, the goal is to go get the other star to be with LeBron. And you, I don't know that you can bank on. There are two things that we keep kind of just assuming are things still. And one of them is that the Lakers mystique is back, right? Because LeBron went to L.A. Like, they struggled for years to have any kind of imprint in free agency outside of Luol Deng and Timofey Mozgov. And we just assume, like, oh, LeBron went back, like, Jeannie Buss fixed it, Magic Johnson fixed it, Rob Pelinka fixed it. They're good. Now they're going to get the stars. And the other thing that we're just kind of assuming is that players definitely want to play with LeBron still, which I'm just not certain is the case. I'm not doubting it, but I don't know why we assume that either. To be so. Yeah.
We've got evidence. I mean, there's guys that they're not going to come out publicly and help us understand with any great detail why they didn't go play with LeBron, but we have a fairly long list of people who chose not to go play with him. And then the Lakerland thing, I'm with you, Zach, because honestly, like, my hot take on the LA front would be that if I'm a free agent, like, I'm listening really hard to the Clippers pitch and maybe enjoying it more than the Lakers pitch.
It's a great situation.
Yeah. Like, because players are so smart these days and they're getting very good counsel, and ownership matters a ton. Management matters a ton. Then if you want to look at the optics, if you're just somebody who doesn't feel like being under the shadows of Kobe and Magic and LeBron and Kareem and Wilt, you know, and all those guys, and you want to start a new chapter and take Clippers, you know, history to a new place that it's never been, then, you know, you got Jerry West, you got a great front office, Lawrence Frank, Michael Winger, all those guys. You know, the Lakers aren't even necessarily winning LA right now.
I was sitting up Radio Row last night for Clippers Wolves, and it is a hilarious trifecta. To my left was Samaki Walker, Lee Jenkins, Lawrence Frank. And watching them watch a basketball game was mind-blowing. It was it's just such a weird group of people to be together. That it was just like Lawrence Frank is reacting to like these calls and these bad plays by the Clippers. Like, oh, what are you doing? What a dumb foul shit. Like, what are you doing? And Lee's just like taking notes and like he's a and Samaki Walker is literally just lying to himself of like, oh, that was a foul. Oh, no, he touched him. Oh, no, he was out of bounds. Like, he's just like he's in that player mode where you're just trying to get away with everything. Like, every call is wrong. And it was just like I was distracted from the game by just watching them. But it does seem like if you want to be a star in LA, there is no pressure if you go to the Clippers. There's
not. Not only that, but they if they do a deal, if they get off Gallinari's money, they're going to have two max slots, and they're going to be, you know, and have I think a better supporting cast than the Lakers had last summer. So it's like the same scenario, just a year later, with, you know, no LeBron obviously. So two slots, come here and do your thing. You know, Doc Rivers was on a First Take or one of the ESPN shows, and he dropped a line that I guarantee you was not by accident, where he talked about how in, you know, the Clippers world, they're focusing on the black top instead of the big top. And I thought it was a great line, and it perfectly captures like the LA landscape, because the circus element is happening with the Lakers and the Clippers are taking a different approach. They're trying to just basically make it about hoops, make it about good management, good ownership, and see where that gets them.
Yeah, the Clippers only have $46 million committed next year. Tobias Harris is going to be a free agent, and he's probably going to get a good amount of money, though. But that's it. I mean, they're wide open. The only big contract they have is
Tobias Harris deal you could move if you re-signed him. That's not that bad.
I'm not buying it, guys. I'm not buying it. I've been to Clipper games. Nobody cares. The players know that. Like,
that's
just
the rub, man.
It's just a different energy when you play for the Lakers. Like, your games feel like they actually matter. You know what I'm saying? Of course, all things being equal, money, and obviously the location is the same, blah, 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 blah. Like, why would I want to play for the Clippers over the Lakers?
The Lakers have banners, right? But the Clippers will put up banners of your face to cover up those banners. Like, you get to look at yourself.
Yo, are they still trying to move?
They're moving to Inglewood.
Inglewood.
Is that legit?
Yeah, 100%.
Oh, yeah.
I wish they would just move to Seattle.
Yep. But
what's stopping Ballmer from doing that? He's probably just like, yo, I'm making enough money in L.A.
I would imagine the league is like, oh, we would really like having a second L.A. team.
Right.
Because even if it's not on par with the Lakers, obviously, that's still making a lot of money.
Yeah, it's easy to sell a new team in Seattle than it would be, I think, to move the Clippers. So, I don't know.
My understanding has always been that it's almost entirely just the business side is, you know, we don't know the books. We don't know the economic landscape, and they make money hand over fist in that market. So LA and the power that comes with it, even compared to a big city like Seattle, is just on a different level.
I've read arguments that Chicago should get a second team.
Sure.
I mean, they need the first team.
They already have a second team. It's called the Milwaukee Bucks.
Somebody called it the first team was. Best team. Yeah, okay. Put some respect on their name.
Yo, is Jason Tatum still untradeable, guys?
Oh, all right. Here we go. Waz is awake.
The Kobe-fication. The Kobe-fication of Jason Tatum.
Oh, boy.
Can we talk about this? When I told these guys before the season started, I was like, look, Jason Tatum had a nice rookie year. He looked great for a rookie in the playoffs. That doesn't mean he's the second coming. Like, he still can't dribble past anybody. I get it. He has a lot of polish.
He's pretty good.
He's trash, Zach.
He's pretty damn good.
But is he untradeable?
I mean, if you had to blink in a scenario where they're like, the only way you're getting Anthony Davis you give is Jason Tatum, yeah, I'd blink. I'd give him up. But, I mean, other than – there's like maybe – you know, 5 to 10 guys in the league, maybe, and that's probably high, that I would trade for him, and that's about it. Like, he's, I mean, he's pretty damn good, Waz. I'm all for slander, but he's pretty good.
He's a good player. It's just the chatter. Windhorse, that's my brother. I love him. He gonna be the best player on the Celtics this year. I'm like, how? He's clearly number three, if that. If I'm even giving him, he's better than Gordon Hayward, which I'm, well, you know, I'm not giving him that.
He's like, well, the Horford's the best player, right?
Him or Kyrie? That's obvious to me.
Oh my God. I mean, obviously he's not the best player on the team. There's like four All-Stars on that team.
But listen, the point that I was trying to make, Zach, is everybody was jumping out the window with this kid. And we need to pump the brakes, man. This, oh, I don't know if Boston wants to put a package around Jason Tatum because he's so good.
Sam, please,
I mean,
Sam,
get out of here. Get out of here.
Sense to this.
I'm not on Team Waz. Sorry, brother. Tatum's legit. I'm going to point to we get reminded every year that if you change the context of a roster, like, it's just there's one ball, there's only so much space. It's a weird thing to have to integrate somebody like Gordon and have these new pieces. I mean, Jason had a clear runway last year, and he took full advantage of it. I mean, I'm not going to look at these 10 games and see the dip in his shooting and worry too much. I just it almost takes me back to our debate about Kyrie and how he got ahead of his own free agency. Like, what is the future of Gordon in Boston? Because, you know, he's taken up space. He's taken up looks. And he's taking a little time to look like himself right now. I mean, I feel like there's got to be a correlation there between, you know, Jason's ability to do what he does and Gordon trying to find his way. Well,
I think we also talked about this a lot, right? Like, you know, at least in the last week or two, of like, maybe the Boston Celtics just don't have a good offensive system.
They don't. I mean, they're 27th right now in offense. And part of this year, why it's so bad. So Jason Tatum has replaced a lot of spot ups with pull ups off the dribble, and they're just not going in. I mean, he's not good at them, and so that's a big thing. I mean, like, over half of his shots now are pull ups off the dribble. So he's shooting these long twos. He's not taking the easy shots that were coming to him within the offense. We sort of saw this happen toward the end of last year, where they asked him to do a little bit more. But this year, I mean, it's just been bad look after bad look. And I think if he would go back to spotting up a little bit more, moving away from the ball and taking these catch and shoot threes, that their offense would be better. He's actually
his catch and shoot looks amazing.
I know,
like,
it's great.
That's wet when he does that.
And the goal,
Dave, of how
Stevens, like, mentioned, yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, I was going to ask you. Like, you mentioned the cobification. How deep was the time those guys spent together?
I don't know. I say that just because he's playing like Kobe. Like,
I thought they trained together.
That's they did. Yeah. And Kobe was apparently Tatum's favorite player growing up. But right. The thing is, so he played like this at Duke.
Oh, boy, was.
And then last year came out, and from guys I know that have watched him play his whole, like, high school career, USA basketball, all this stuff, last season was how he grew up playing. Collaborative player, moving the ball, spotting up, not taking bad shots, not doing the mid-range stuff where he's kind of pounding the leather off the ball. And now, I mean, he's just – his numbers dribbling the basketball are just bad. I mean, again, over half of his shots now are coming off the dribble, whereas last year I think it was like less than a third. So I think that would be one big fix. Like, Jason Tatum is, you know, 6'10 or whatever he is. He can defend and he can shoot. But I think he's a guy that needs to just stick to his role for this team to have success. You can't have three Kyries out there. Right. He's not a good enough playmaker off the dribble to make the rest of the team good. So this is where Gordon Hayward, and I think, you know, Waz and I have talked about this. Gordon Hayward is probably their best, the best guy they have at actually opening things up for other people off the dribble.
Especially if you, yeah, off the dribble.
Right.
Al Horford could do it from the elbows and all of that.
Yeah.
And,
you but know, Gordon's passing. So good in pick and roll. Like, he is, like, he should be running their offense.
I love the fact I'm going to tie together the Lakers and Celtics discussion we've had. Like, it's so interesting to me when you have, like, both those teams have this fascinating collection of vets and young guys. where, again, they're never going to talk to us about this stuff, but I would love to know, you know, like Kyle Kuzma, you know, you're not winning a ton of games last year in Lakerland, but you're starting to progress. You're starting to learn about yourself within the NBA. Here comes the great LeBron James. Now you're coming off the bench. Now you got to adjust. Now you barely see the ball. You know, now you don't know when your time's coming. Jason Tatum, guys like that. You know, all right, Kyrie, Gordon, thrilled to have you guys back. Now everything changes. Now everything's a little bit tougher. You know, it's just the dynamic and seeing all these people try to navigate those waters is super interesting.
I actually think Kuzma's doing pretty well at adjusting. You know, he's kind of doing what they need him to do, which is score. Unfortunately, he can't defend, but I mean, he's doing his job on the offensive end. I think out of all those guys, he probably winds up fitting long term the best next to LeBron.
Right.
I mean, I think that's the part of the issue. Like we always just assume the Thunder really screwed this up years ago by that young team finally getting success, winning 50 games, getting into the, you know, deep in the playoffs, getting to the finals. Like, young players are stupid. Like, they just, they are. Yeah, like, young players have no idea what they're doing. And so now we have this expectation where some young guy comes in the league and does something the first year, like, okay, he's the next one. And it's not saying Tatum isn't the next one, right? He might be. He looks like he can play the part. It's just, there are dumb mistakes they're going to make every single night.
This is why
you can't
talking
be counted
people,
upon to carry the team.
Yeah, right. Like, you not NBA. For winning basketball.
It's
like,
so it's rare just, that anybody can do it. And this is why I'm talking people off the ledge with Colin Sexton. You know, rookie point guards in particular are really bad, but rookies in general are bad. This is a part of the learning curve. If they came in and they were able to dominate, what kind of league would it be?
You know, like, look at De'Aaron Fox, and I'm not saying he's going to keep this up all year.
Oh, he is. He's great.
Yeah. Yeah, but like from year one to year two, I mean, I was all in on De'Aaron last year, and you saw, you know, at Summer League, he had some great moments, and you kind of enjoy. He's got some swagger to him, and you're ready to see him do his thing. And he barely did his thing out of all 82 last year. He had a pretty subpar year. And then all of a sudden, you know, he's wired differently. He's learned all these lessons. And it's only year two. I mean, Willie Cauley-Stein is another guy. And it's not a wing, obviously. But, you know, this guy's woken up a little bit in year four. I mean, I always think back to, like, Blake Griffin, one of the best rookies in terms of at least hype. And he was very productive. And Blake comes in, you know, after that year sitting out with the injury. And he's gangbusters, and he's highlight reel every single night, and he's pretty darn good by rookie standards. And the Clippers, I don't think they won any more games that season than they did before. Like, rookies just don't make a major impact.
I mean, we all talked all last season about how Tatum benefited from such a great situation. You know, he didn't have to be the primary initiator. He really just got to kind of learn. He was already on a good team and all these other things, sort of like Donovan Mitchell. Right. Like, they benefit from being in good situation. And now what we're seeing is, granted, I think this is part of their plan, their development plan. They want him to have more responsibility. It's just not working out right now. And I think that in order for them to stabilize their offense, they're going to need to have him take a step back, go back into more of that, you know, wing 3-and-D wing role that he started last year as. And then let him find his footing as he gets more comfortable this season. And I'm not out on Tatum by any means. And, you know, like, I like to make jokes, but I still think Tatum's going to be a very good player.
Yeah, guys, live from a moving van.
A vacuum cleaner. Somebody's in a vacuum cleaner.
Right, live from a U-Haul. What's up, Tom?
Every week.
Yeah, that was a Zamboni.
Continues to outdo himself.
Okay. Hockey Haverstraw.
That was a Zamboni. So, yeah, my
actually,
bad, guys.
Actually named after John Zamboni. Fun fact.
It's like the Cobb salad.
I don't know if it was John, but it's definitely Zamboni.
Sure. Right, yes. The Zamboni machine was definitely named after Zamboni. That's like, we get that.
Guys, can I break some news here?
Yes.
I just talked to Vince Carter.
Wow. Okay. What happened?
Sam, just for a little backstory.
Sam and Dave don't know, but Vince Carter blocked Tom Haverstraw on Twitter.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, what happened? Did you tell him, Tom?
But Sam, here's the thing. He was my favorite player growing up, and I still don't know why. And I've checked all my tweets, like, with the mentions of, like, Vince Carter or whatever. I don't know. Okay. So I didn't have the cojones to bring it up.
Wow. Oh, come on.
I know. I'm so disappointed in myself, but he was on this like good old trip of like memory lane and reading about Dr. J growing up, and I just didn't want to bring him down. Be like, why did you block me, man? Because like, Tom, I don't know.
That's like a Columbo, like, oh, and just one more thing, Vince. Like, that's the end of the interview kind of thing.
I would love it if Vince just shot back because you're a dick.
Because you suck. So he waxed poetic about, you know, growing up and worshiping Dr. J, and how like today if you wanted to worship an NBA player, you just hop on Twitter or YouTube and just watch their highlights, whereas back in the day he was a big Dr. J fan and just went to the library and read books about him, and that's the YouTube for his generation. And I was like, damn, that's right. It's like, what does a Dr. J fan do back then? Sam, would you like to report on how you became NBA fans when you just didn't have Twitter or YouTube?
What, did it go to the resident old guy in the room?
Yeah, please, old man Amick, please regale us of these typewriter days.
What were the 80s like?
Put your bifocals on.
The harp's going, Jane.
All right, I'll play your game, Tom. It's funny, like, I've told the story before. So I grew up in the Bay. And the Warriors were awful. So I looked right past them, and I was part of the MJ Legion of fans. But like, I used to photocopy every Michael Jordan piece, mostly SI, where every time there was, you know, a long read on Michael, I'd be that kid that was sitting there. My mom had like her own business, so she had her own copy machine. So I'm sitting there going, hey, Mom, can you take a quick break and let me do my thing? And I'd photocopy them all and three hole punch them and put them into my my Michael Jordan binder. So that was the old school approach that I took.
So you guys don't know this, but Sam told me that off air, and that's why I asked the question.
Wow.
Yeah, so I was a Bulls fan growing up because I'm from Richmond and we don't have a team. We had the Bullets, but, you know, who?
Yeah.
Again, we don't have a team. But WGN was just incredible because it was on all the cable networks. So I got to watch like every Bulls game as a kid. I mean, that's how I got to watch Jordan and fall in love. Like if I was stuck to watching the Saturday games on NBC or whatever, like that would have been brutal. It's crazy how much everything's changed.
For sure. The other,
did you say brutal?
Yeah.
Oh, that's one of Jade's Twitter buzzwords.
No, that's one of Tom's.
What I do? I was just thinking about how you know, NBA on NBC was a great era.
And hey, wow,
NBC's
wow,
a great company.
Yes. Watch This Is Us in the Good Place, right, Tom?
Yeah. That's right. That's right. Saturday Night Live every Saturday night. I don't know if you guys knew that.
And it's live.
It is live.
It's a live show, right?
It's got this guy, Ariana Grande's ex-fiance, Pete Davidson. Do you guys know Ariana Grande? She's kind of famous.
Never heard of her. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. So NBC, yeah. Go watch. I'm here at a Hawks Hornets shoot around, and the Trae Young show is here, and Vince Carter's here, and Jeremy Lin. So I don't really know. If you guys have any questions, I can maybe answer them.
Trae Young's hair in person.
Yeah, Radio Ethan isn't wrong about that. Not wrong about it. So he's...
Do you know what I think makes it worse? I think it's the facial hair that makes it worse.
Yes.
It's not a good compliment.
It's just as bad.
Yeah.
Give me the... I got to get the cliff notes on this. I missed Ethan's take on Trey's hair.
No, it's Radio Ethan's take.
Radio Ethan.
Yeah, sorry. Radio Ethan, yeah.
Yeah, we can't attribute it to actual Ethan Strauss, but Radio Ethan is just screaming from the mountaintop that Trae Young is balding.
Ah, gotcha. Yeah, I could see that.
And that's why he's not a good player. So that's ridiculous, but that's Radio Ethan for you. John Collins, his shorts were really short, and he's a weight guy, so I'm a big fan of that. Anything else from Shooter?
Wait, you're a fan of him being a weight guy, or you're a fan of him having short shorts because he's a weight guy?
Also, all of it. Okay. If there was, you know, A, B, or C, multiple choice, all of the above.
I like the fact that we're going to shorter shorts.
Are we? Is it just like Jaylen Brown and
well, it's Jay-C, all right. It's a small few, but it was a small few that went to baggy shorts for a while, right? Like, right. I'm as someone who fully believes in skies out, thighs out. Like I'm someone who like, you know, show like you work those quads for a reason. Show off the quads.
Right. Zach, we're about the same age, right?
I'm 36.
Okay. So I'm 37. So when you were playing basketball in high school, middle school, you got stuck with the 1970s nut huggers, right?
No. In high school, we were fully integrated into like the post Fab Five era where like it was like baggy and one shorts and everything. Like it was.
Oh, see, I went to poor schools. So we had the jerseys that like people's parents had worn in the 70s.
I went to an all boys Catholic school high school. So and I went to a Catholic school before this. So the school itself, like my parents didn't have any money, but the school itself had a lot of money.
Yeah. So we were constantly like, you wanted a longer jersey top so you could pull your shorts down lower. We were wearing like the compression shorts, you know, just anything to, you know, cover your legs up. But
I remember wearing the compression shorts under because Michael Jordan did it. And I remember thinking, this is so uncomfortable. Why are we doing this?
Yeah, I used to do the wristband up on the forearm for the same.
Wristbands were so dumb.
Yeah. I actually used it to wipe sweat. I did that just walking around.
That's just the Molly. That's just the Molly kicking in, Jay. Well, as you'll appreciate this, I think maybe I've told this story before. Is I walked like this is like I was like 19 at this point, and I went to play basketball at a pickup run in a gym, this is like full blown accessory era in basketball, right? There are headbands, there are wristbands, all this shit. So I walk in with like a forearm band, a headband, and like two like finger bands. The cage finger bands. And I remember this older guy, like, you know, in his 30s or whatever, this older guy looks at me and he looks down at like my, you know, the shit on me and everything. He just looks to me and goes, kid, you better be able to play. and it was that point I was like, oh, I gotta stop with this bullshit.
Anytime I'd go to the park and I saw a guy with the AI headband and arm sleeve. Like, if you rock an arm sleeve to the park.
No, arm sleeve is what.
I'm sick in the head.
I don't understand the arm sleeve in the NBA, let alone a park.
That's why I love the Klay Thompson night when, you know, if you're ever going to rock the headband, you can rock it when you're 50 plus to a
and bust it open. Game.
Bleeding, right?
Right. Yeah. Right.
God, we're old. That's what I got from that conversation. Because now, I mean, like, short shorts are back. It looks good. I
out of my mind, personally.
Oh,
Sam,
yeah.
Sam, yeah. Can you give us some Ben Stiller stories?
What? I need more. I don't have enough. It's the perception.
Are we just naming random actors? You can tell stories?
Ben Stiller is Sam's buddy or something?
Ben Stiller is a big fan of Sam's old podcast with Jeff.
Jade, I'm drafting from the you know, the Jeff Zilgit popularity that you know, captures the entire NBA. So Ben,
you think it was by virtue of Jeff that Ben's a big fan.
We had like, so Ben liked in our podcast, he was very nice to us when we would do pods and he would retweet them and he would like draw all this attention to him. And what I've learned about Ben is a sucker. Like he doesn't like, not just sports media, but he recoils at kind of the hot take culture of political reporting, sports, all of the above. Right. And so Ben would champion the, you know, that Jeff and I were both more measured and he liked the pod, but like that's like the social media relationship is as much as I can boast about my relationship with Ben. We exchanged a few DMs. That's about it.
Did you ever invite him on?
Jeff was working on it and it never ended up happening. I think it, you know, at some point, who knows? I would love to do it, but they became
I know where this is going, Jade. Can you get him on this show?
Let's do it.
We had this thing for a while where he said, let the, you talk about your ultimate qualifier. He's like, let's have the Knicks be above 500 and then I'll come on. It's like, all right, Ben, if you just don't want to do it, let's just say
right,
so.
Yeah.
You
okay.
know? Yeah. But it has been kind of cool to see like Jeff and Ben, like have actually spent time together in New York. They've had lunch. They are legitimate buddies and it's neat, man. He seems like a very cool guy.
Can you get his dad?
I'll work on it, Jade.
What about Christine Taylor? Are they still married?
No, I don't think they are.
Yeah, okay.
Well, then maybe she'll want to come on and talk shit about him.
You're not helping, Zach.
Well, that's why he's got to race to do this podcast first. He's got to get out in front of it.
Way to exploit somebody's, you know, marital difficulties for your own podcast.
That's what we do on this podcast. That's literally our tagline.
Hey, by the way, Sam, have you been able to see Tom in the flesh lately?
I saw him briefly at Oracle as he was making the Peacock tour all around the country.
How was he?
But yes.
How was
he? He was good.
Yeah.
He felt like a man of the hour. I mean, it's been fun to see him making the rounds.
Oh, everyone just congratulating him.
Hopping from studio to studio and sitting in between, you know, various courtside commentators and espousing all things NBA. It's been great.
Nice.
Hey, I was listening to the Daily Ding this morning.
Yes.
Great show.
You mentioned that Tom Thibodeau might be his seat might be on fire right now.
I don't know if it's on fire because Glenn Taylor is pretty removed from a lot of this stuff. Like I think the last time Glenn Taylor was really involved in anything, at least my understanding, aside from going to games, it was the 2-hour meeting he had with, or I don't know if it, the meeting was 2 hours, but it was like, or maybe it was 2 hours of practice, but the meeting he had with Jimmy Butler following the whole practice debacle, right? Where they had an understanding of like, I need you to play hard for us while we're trying to trade you and all that crap. All the stuff that Glenn Taylor makes people promise that then they don't come through on. And so, I don't know how involved Glenn is, but from talking to people in and around the organization, it's just the idea of like, not that his seat is hot. It's that maybe a change is what's for the best, and not just the Jimmy Butler trade, but like, let's just clean house. Like the culture is so toxic and so entrenched with these two sides. And that's the funny thing is that Jimmy is trying to get dealt. And yet he and Tom have never been like more entrenched together because it's just going to be like, well, while you're here, it's us against them. And yeah, that's how toxic the craziest situation.
I don't know if I've ever seen a dynamic like this. I mean, they just came through my neck of the woods. I talked to Tom for a while, pushed him a little bit on just the idea that are we definitely going to continue saying that Jimmy deciding game to game if he's going to play is not related to his trade demand, and Tom is sticking by it. You know what I mean? Like, it's crazy to me that Tom's ability to compartmentalize is something we should all aspire to. Like, I don't know how in the world, because in Chicago and Minnesota, the, you know, Flames are singeing his hair at every turn, and he just looks around as if it's just cool as a cucumber. It doesn't bother him, and he's fine when things are chaotic, and he's, you know, like the most stubborn guy you're gonna run into. I'm dying to see where it all goes. But the vibe's definitely extremely negative. And it's permeated the whole organization. And the Glenn Taylor thing, Zach, I think you're right about your read on it. I mean, it's strange though, because it's not like, you know, absentee ownership. Like Glenn,
right? Yeah, it's not like he's just involved in a very detached way, if that makes sense.
But
which is kind of what you want.
I think.
Well, not when you've got this going on.
Well, right. I know, but
he's like, attached enough to where I would say like, now the focus for me would be more like studying his personality from the standpoint of like the fear factor. Like, I just really get the sense that he's paralyzed, kind of paralysis by analysis type thing.
Right,
and
right.
They have home games and they're discounting tickets to 30% and 40%. And he sees that 7,000 people showed up and he knows that if he fires Tibbs, it probably only gets worse. Or maybe, you know, I don't think he knows what to do, but it is incredible how, I mean, they're just stuck in neutral here and the deals don't seem to be getting better. And, you know, and Jimmy is walking this fascinating line where he is going rogue to an extent and doing different things, but he's not taking it over the top in the kind of way that, to be honest, I thought he might, if you go back 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah. I mean, I think that conversation with Glenn Taylor curbed that. I could be wrong about that. He might have just been placating Glenn and it's just his representation saying, okay, this didn't work. We can't damage your Q rating that much if you keep doing the stuff and it doesn't get you traded. So it could be that, but I do wonder if that conversation had something to do with it.
And I agree. And I think that's also why you're seeing Jimmy push back so hard when, you know, the media has the audacity to actually say what's happening, which, you know, our guys, I 100% believe got it right with
John. Oh yeah, absolutely.
And Shams Charania, that it's, you know, part of the plan is to make sure the T-Wolves don't take him for granted. And, but it's that he seems that he's trying to do that just enough so that it doesn't have the opposite effect of actually taking the PR hit, which is
right.
You get paid a lot of money to play this game and, you know, you probably could play and you're choosing not to play.
Would you rather have this situation, Waz, or would you rather be the Wizards?
Oof, I'd much rather be Minnesota. I mean, they still got Towns. I'm still somebody who thinks Andrew Wiggins can be a good NBA player. I'd much rather be them, the Wizards. And at least their two young guys seem to, like, kind of like each other.
They do, yeah. At least they do get along.
Like, and not an open civil war like the Wizards two guys. So there's that.
It's also weird that the Wolves contract situation seems more manageable than the Wizards, even though it's big money to guys that aren't really getting anything done, right? Like, the Wizards are much more accomplished, obviously, but the fact that John Wall's money is doubling,
right,
really hurts that.
Well,
that,
and his knees aren't getting any younger.
His knee swelling is doubling as well.
Right. And with Wiggins, like, there's a functional player in there. And I think a large part of it is, like, he plays out of position. He hasn't improved on his handling at all. Like, that's the one thing that could unlock so much for him. And he hasn't done any, it's almost like he's done no work. I don't know whether he has or not, but he hasn't improved since his rookie year.
Which is weird because, you know, you've seen the videos of guys working out in the summer.
Don't get me started on Instagram sizzle reels.
Fultz is injured, right? Isn't that what we're saying? Is that the line
that was crazy.
That's why he's not switching jump shots this season.
Yeah, because he's hurt. Man, that whole thing is crazy. Like, teaching a guy 18 dribble moves like he's going to do it in the NBA, I just never
understand. Oh, no. I don't know, you know, how active you are on Instagram, but now we're getting videos of the practice video and then in the application to the game.
Oh.
With the one highlight where it happened and worked.
Yeah, I deleted my Instagram. Okay. So, well, no.
Fire it back up, Dave, because these these application videos are pretty incredible.
Sure. I don't know, man. I'm out on that whole thing. I think that it's funny, like with my coaching background, like, I try to focus on stuff that's useful. And I don't see much of that coming out of these videos. A lot of mid-range pull-ups.
I don't think useful stuff is really helpful in the NBA.
Jahlil Okafor shooting turnaround mid-rangers with terrible footwork. I don't think that's going to keep him in a job.
Wait, what about the Bynum comeback? The Bynum comeback looks so legit on Instagram.
I'm sorry, the what? Where he was posting up like Amin's uncle? What?
I'm not hip on the trainer stuff, so maybe you guys can update me. But I felt like this thing.
It's a sham.
Between the Instagram beef between Drew Hanlon and I forget who else's trainer was it?
Chris Brickley, yeah.
Well, and then he's beefing with another trainer too.
Well, but the concept of like touting your client's shooting percentages as shots fired, like, that blew my mind.
It is the most 2018 NBA Twitter thing that could happen. Mm-hmm. Like, these guys going, well, your guy's shooting this and my guy's shooting this. Like, it's the dumbest argument. I'd rather these two just go play one-on-one. Let's settle it that way. I don't give a damn about your clients and what they're doing in the NBA. You guys just go play a game. Post the highlights on Instagram. You can edit it to where it looks like you both did nothing but make shots, and that's what we'll do, right?
And now, should do that in media. We should do that in media, like editors hitting people on Twitter, like, well, my guy got 300 retweets.
My guy got
what the hell
retweets.
Did you do?
Your guy screwed up a semicolon.
I mean, that really, but it tripped me out because it seems to betray what I would have assumed about, like, that, you know, it's almost like that attorney client privilege type.
Exactly.
That part is like, how does Jason Tatum feel being kind of put out there?
You guys know that Neil O'Shea started out as one of these guys, right? And he actually this summer kind of talked about it a little bit at Summer League. He was saying, like, This was pre-social media, but he was like, the idea that you would be training a guy and then even talking about it was just so taboo. Like, I mean,
right.
He was like, people knew who you were because agents hired you or teams hired you or whatever, and it was word of mouth. But you wouldn't go out and say, oh, yeah, I trained Antoine Walker. You know, it just didn't work that way because guys were they wanted it to be so private. But now everything is content for everyone. This is sort of like with basketball players having podcasts and all this other stuff. So it's all just about how do I get content out of this during the summer? How is this going to affect my brand? Am I going to sell shoes from this or whatever? And it's tiresome, man.
Look, call me old fashioned, but once I see a guy wearing Yeezys and Virgil Abloh Nike collab and Supreme, I'm out. Sorry.
Wait, are you telling
nobody's
me
nobody's training me rocking that? No.
Are you telling me Pete Newell wasn't gonna post that stuff on Instagram? You tell me, come on now.
No, he wasn't.
You know he was sending out pamphlets in the mail.
I need a t-shirt and a whistle. That's it, brother.
Shout out to Tim Gergerich for still having the secret camp.
Yeah.
Right?
The secret camp, yeah. That's gonna be the new thing. It's gonna be, oh, this is an underground camp. No one, it's so exclusive. We're not gonna be posting pictures of the Hoodie Mellow runs.
We gotta try to start that.
Yeah,
that's our run. The secret run.
I'm all in on starting the next grift
that's
in
right.
the NBA.
Yeah. You guys wouldn't believe who's gonna be there. I can't tell you.
Right.
It's a secret.
Maybe it's gonna be Big Waz, maybe it's gonna be Michael Jordan. We don't know. We don't know who we can get. You gotta show up and pay a lot of money to find out.
Standing room only.
Exactly, because we can't afford chairs.
Hey, do football players still do ballet lessons? Do you remember that one?
You know, actually,
Stephon Marbury did ballet lessons, right?
Yeah.
Am I remembering Jerry that Rice correctly?
Did. I mean, Jerry yes, Rice did back in the day.
Jerry Rice was so balletic with his moves on the field.
That's Flash 80, man.
The post career hasn't been great, but we're not going to slander Jerry Rice on this podcast, okay?
Yeah.
Balletic.
But I mean, they ought to. I mean, footwork, like this training footwork and stuff like that is important. Training your ball handling. Like if you guys ever watch Steph Curry, the pregame warm-up, right? Where they're throwing the ball to him and he's getting his feet set for a catch yes. and shoot in awkward positions. Like that stuff is so useful. But the majority of your training work should be without the basketball in your hands. That's how you play the game most of the time, unless you're Kyrie Irving or Chris Paul. You know, like you just don't have that ball in your hands that often. And so I think that's the big mistake that you see. But it doesn't look good on Instagram, I guess.
No, because then you're just Shep and above the rim playing ball without a ball, right? That's a great fucking reference. Come on.
That's really good. That's really
a great
good.
Movie. I know Waz doesn't like his Tupac's a New Yorker in the movie, but that's a great.
Above the rim.
Anyway, it was the guy who was Frank Zamboni that invented the Zamboni. So Frank okay. Joseph Zamboni Jr.
So Tom nailed it when he said a guy named Zamboni invented the Zamboni machine.
Who? I mean, this guy Tom's amazing, you know?
Yeah.
Incredible.
NBC's yeah. own.
Yeah, you should subscribe to The Athletic for Tom Haverstroh.
Turned what was a 90-minute task, Zach, to a 15-minute job. So,
ooh.
Hey, I'm all about that efficiency. A lot of things in life.
And you could buy one if you want to have 15, one.
15 might be too long.
$10,000 is all you need for a good brand new Zamboni.
Okay, hold on. Now, all right, maybe I'm taking this into
a weird
place.
I don't know how the hell it gets to your house.
But a Zamboni and a sex robot cost the same amount of money?
Well, a Zamboni is just like a giant iron, right?
How do they get it to your house?
I'm going to assume they drive it. Yes, I'm assuming that's what they do. Because that's the only way to get something somewhere is you have to drive it. What, Jay? They ship it. What do you mean how they get it to your house?
I would just die if I saw that thing down the road. Oh, it's so funny. I had the pleasure of taking my children ice skating recently. And I got to tell my son, I was like, oh, my God, there's the Zamboni. You know what I mean? Because it's so unusual. It's such a unique creation.
Now you can tell them the history.
Yeah.
Let me tell you about Frank, my Italian brother, Zamboni.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. This is what
All right.
You claim?
Yes, indeed.
All right.
Is that it?
Is that all we got? I think so. I think we covered it. Thanks, Sam. Everything. Yeah, thanks, Sam. Sam Amick of The Athletic. Subscribe to TheAthletic.com. It's the best money you can spend every month. And, you know, it's like with all the discounts that you end up getting, it's like $4 a month.
It's awesome. I don't work for The Athletic. And I mean, it's the best sports content on the internet. Hands down.
I have a new – that's very nice of you, Dave. I have a new story pitch, Zach. I don't know if this should be for you or me or Ethan or somebody else. Is we need to do a deep dive on players who block reporters and why.
Oh, my God. I cannot wait for the Hawks to come through town. I'm absolutely going to ask him. And I'm going to – and I'm getting one. I'm going to get Vince on video.
Your list? What's your list, Sam?
I feel like we may – I don't know. I wasn't trying to set up that segue. I think we might have been on this. The one – mine's not quite as mysterious. The only one I'm aware of is good old DeMarcus.
Yes.
I'm blocked by Jalen, but Jalen blocks everybody, and I don't think I've ever tweeted at him. I think I got hit with a drive-by.
Mm. Really?
I caught a stray. Yeah.
I think the only NBA guy I'm blocked by is Dan Gilbert.
Dan follows me, and I don't want to get anybody in trouble. I had a funny thing recently with Dan thinking that somebody else wrote something that that I had written, and through a third party getting upset about it. And I found humor in the fact that he couldn't track down the source of the information in order to complain. But yeah, I think Dan's a lurker. I think he's definitely.
Well, I legitimately tweeted at him during the lockout, "You have ruined the NBA." So I think I figured out the tweet that did it.
You earned it.
Yeah.
I had another one. This is not as interesting, but we run into like media politics. Like I had one recently where, and I don't want to name the guy's name, but like I had unfollowed him, like, and it was nothing personal. It was just kind of cleaning up the timeline a little bit. And then to me, it was nothing. And it was like, no hard feelings, no this, no that. And then you kind of forget sometimes that people that, you know, we all pay attention to this stuff. And then it changed the vibe when I ended up interacting with that person on a different level. I mean, it's, you know, things we didn't have to worry about.
I've had the same issue with Winhurst. It's unbelievable.
Did he unfollow you?
That's the one thing for me whenever like one of the bigger name like NBA media people will follow me, I always just think like this will not be there in a week. There's no way. There's no fucking way this is still gonna be a follow in a week. Like Hollinger followed me and unfollowed me a lot over the years. He's stuck with it now. Now that we know a lot better. But yeah, he used to follow me and unfollow me all the time.
He never followed me. You know who that was for me is Adonde.
Oh,
for
okay.
some reason, I don't even know why. I was like his exclusive producer for a while.
Maybe that's why.
Have you ever talked about the fact like you know people or have met people or hung out with them and then they don't follow you? That's like a funny one to me.
Yes.
Well, I was going to say now I back myself into a corner. I don't know why I brought this topic up, so I now have to disclose.
Oh yeah, no, this is good.
I have to disclose. Cool. No, I just followed Dave for the first time.
Oh, you know what's funny? I thought I followed Dave. And then the other day, Jade was like, "Hey, follow Dave. He needs to DM you." I was like, "What? I thought I did." Yeah, so that was
my stuff is just in the zeitgeist.
Sam's just being a dick. But like, I was legitimately
in the interest of full disclosure. Right, I'm it really does Harper. Hurt. It does hurt Dave's feelings. Let me tell you,
it did. It hurt my feelings. I was like, I can't believe Zach doesn't follow me. Like, what the hell?
I honestly thought I did.
No, I was just staring at the follow button. I was like, is it bad form to actually hit follow while we're still doing the pod, or should I 100%. Wait till after the pod?
Yeah, no, you know. You should know the move is, Sam, is then you follow him like maybe an hour later and like, or when the podcast posts,
when the pod drops.
Goes, oh man, I thought this was happening already.
You got to do it when there's an influx of tweets so they don't notice, you know?
Yeah. Well, I don't get notifications for those.
See, there you go.
I've taken away the game aspect of Twitter by turning off my notifications.
That is smart.
Because then I just fire off, you know, like Jason Tatum stats, and I don't care. I can ignore it. It's great.
Oh, man. Did you vote today, Sam?
I voted yesterday. I was an absentee dropper off at the mailbox at the local library approach.
Nice.
But I got my sticker. Hopefully get my house back.
What?
But. What? I said, I hope I didn't mean to get political. I said, hopefully we get the house back.
Oh, the house back.
Yes.
I thought you said you had lost your house somehow.
No, Dave, I should have said
our house. Yes.
Yeah. What's up?
Well, it's looking good, although I don't believe in any of these. Yeah, I know, no, right? Exactly.
Yeah. It looked good for like an hour, you know, 2 years ago, and then it was shit. Yeah. So
I'm telling you guys, one of the like most ridiculous things in my life is that my wife fell asleep when we were watching the election coverage in 2016, thinking that Hillary was going to win.
Oh, man.
And I woke her up at midnight or whatever it was to let her know that Donald Trump, and she just did not. She thought it was a prank.
But it never looked good, by the way.
No, it didn't. But
it only looked good from the like feeling that it was going to happen. It was like once the polls started coming in, it was never good.
Yeah, but I mean, it was just even up until the end, I didn't think that there was any chance that it was going to happen. I was like, oh, this is going to come around.
I think like an hour and a half into the night, I turned the TV off. It's like, I don't even want to fucking see this.
I was at Staples. We had Lakers and Mavs. Yeah, and it's pretty tough to forget because I was standing next to the one and only Mark Cuban, like right when it actually was a done deal. And what struck me, because Mark had been a pretty vocal critic of the president, is that like all of a sudden, because he was the president and not a celebrity apprentice star, I remember asking Mark, like, any chance in hell you feel like sharing your view on this? And he essentially looked at me and was like, yeah, this man just, and I'm paraphrasing, but the whole sense was he's got a lot more power now. I'm not going to just pop off. It was kind of this stark. I mean, it was incredible. And the look on his face was certainly memorable.
I remember that night because Nate Duncan kept tweeting about basketball.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember that.
I respect it.
I'm not going to stop doing my job just because.
I respect it. I it's funny because, like, I say this all the time. Like, Nate gets a bad rep for being, like, a basketball robot. But the truth is, like, that's his job, man. Like, I respect it that he stuck with it. Like, that's awesome. Like, I think that's pretty inspiring.
No. Wow.
Yeah. No, I'm with it. I'm with it.
Hey, I'm fine. I wouldn't say it's fucking inspiring. Like,
no. Hey, that's
he's tweeting Chris Dunn highlights. Like, no.
Oh, my God, Dave. What the hell?
Stick to it.
I am clipping that. Stick to it. Thank you. No.
I'm all for sick of this job. When you call it inspiring, I'm out.
I'm putting that. I'm going to juxtapose. I'm going to get some national anthem and that clip going. We are done.
I love it, man. You got to stick to it. That's the stuff that makes this country great.
Thought you were talking about JFK for a second there.